Welcome to At a Crossroads of the Naked Podcaster, where we bear it all emotionally and spiritually. This podcast is designed to support and uplift you as a Christian. I'm your host, Jen Taylor from momof18.com. Each week on the podcast, I'll bring you an inspiring message to support you in designing and creating a vibrant, fulfilling life. Before we dive in, please visit all of the links in the communities as this is a live broadcast. Feel free to ask questions I can answer during the podcast. At Crossroads with the Naked Podcasters for Christians who know that there is more to life and that our true authentic souls are built for greatness. You are built with strength and love that is meant to shine through during times of conflict and celebration. Welcome. I can't wait to bear it all with you. In my business as a coach for Christian women, I help them to step into who they are meant to be and be inspired by their purpose and God-given gifts. Follow the links to sign up for my free training on how you as a Christian can begin to design the life that's meant for you. Reach out to me at any time on momof18.com.
Hello. Today I have Marty Ray from the Marty Ray Project. How are you?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
I am great. I am so excited. I'm on like these podcast connect things with other podcasters, and James Allen, you're the only person. He's like, Jen, you need to get in touch with Marty Ray, the Marty Ray Project, and have him on. And I was like, okay. And I did it. And here we are.
The first scheduled date was a confusion on my part. And I apologize about that.
That happens. I am just so happy to have you here. So I've been following you, totally stalking you online for a little while now. And man, you blow me away. So tell me who you are and what you're doing right now.
Well, I'm just that same old type guy that Jesus put here with a song, and I sing, and some people seem to like it, like you. You like it, and some other people do. So that's what I tell people. They say, what do you do? I'm just a guy that God put here to sing and write songs, and some people like them, some people don't. So that's what I'm doing right now. I'm just singing and writing songs. Do a little acting too.
All right.
And podcasting.
Okay. So, I wanted to ask you about that too, because I saw that you had a podcast. Tell me about the podcast a little bit.
It's a kind of a revamped podcast because I was podcasting in 2007 before anybody was, really.
Yeah.
Like a long time ago. If I would have stayed with it, I probably would be one of the biggest podcasts in the world. But if don't really do much for you, does it? But I didn't, and because my music started picking up, and since that happened, I couldn't keep a co-host. I was doing everything myself, so I quit. I did it for about a year. It was doing pretty well. The show now got I revamped it, and it's the same type of format. So it's an interview show where I bring in entertainers from all walks of entertainment, whatever that is, boxing, MMA, singing, dancing, acting, whatever it is, and we just interview them. And sometimes it's always seems to be funny. So it's always fun, but sometimes it gets it a little deep, and that's good too.
Yeah.
So we just like to figure out things for a person that might be a fan on the show, a person that might be a fan of the person on the show, try to figure out things or ask questions that other people ain't asking. That's kind of what we do.
Yes, I love that. I need to apply to be a guest on yours. That would be so fun.
Yes, ma'am.
Tell me about the singing. And I'm smiling because I follow you, and you are absolutely incredibly talented. Incredibly talented. Tell me about what motivates you, inspires you to do certain clips, why you do them. Because you have one by Vanilla Ice, and you crushed it. I wouldn't have thought that was your genre, and you knocked it out of the park. So where do you get your inspiration for singing clips and the songs that you do, that you remake?
I don't really sing clips. I sing a full video posted to my YouTube channel, and then I just chop it up for other social medias, because TikTok and Instagram reels and things like that, they like a certain time frame. So then but it's good because you can take a 3-minute video or more, and you can chop it up and post a different part every week. You know, can people seem to react to it all differently? So I don't know why people would rather hear just a minute of a song rather than the whole thing. but some people would. So that's fine with me. As far as the Vanilla Ice thing, that happened years and years ago. That's an old video. And Vanilla Ice, I'll go back to square one here. I had a video that went viral called All About That Beard. It was a parody of, believe it or not, it was a parody of All About That Bass by Meghan Trainor.
Uh-huh.
So I did you know I'm all about that beard, no stubble. So I was doing that instead of All About That Bass because my buddy and I were driving down the road and we were jamming to that. And he said, because, you know, she says All About That Bass, meaning thick mm-hmm. people, you know, and I'm fat. So, you know, I'm all about that bass too. And that's kind of just how God made me. So we were riding down the road and he said, you're actually all about that bass and beard. Because, you know, you're fat and bearded, essentially what he was saying. And I said, you know what? You're right. So I'm going to make a song about being fat and bearded. And that's what I did. And I was learning. I didn't know how to make music videos, but I wanted to learn. So I said, this would be a good song to do and actually start to learn how to actually do a video that competes. Not that that one does, but competes with these big videos of these people that I looked up to on YouTube that were making these amazing music videos. And I rented a camera and I made the video. It's a crappy video, but I didn't know what I was doing. I was learning and I figured this is a good learning, but it ended up going viral. Got 2 million views in a day. And I started gaining some fans at that point. And I wanted to be consistent. I was trying to be consistent in posting videos because that's key to doing anything on social media.
Yeah.
And I hadn't posted a video in about 2 weeks. And again, like I said, this is years ago. I don't know how many years, but this is years ago. And I call it the good old. There? You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, I got a phone call. That's what I hate about doing these stream yards and stuff is you get a phone call, and doing it on your phone at least, you get a phone call and it cuts you completely out. But anyway, I was I hadn't posted a video in a while, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had been messing around acoustically with a couple of rap songs from when I was a teenager. It was Ice Ice Baby and Nothing But a G Thing. So I ended up posting Ice Ice Baby that night, and I even in the original caption I said, "This is the way I've been doing Ice Ice Baby. You probably, you know, don't care about this song at this point. This is an old song, but." Nonetheless, if you don't like it, wait till the next one. And lo and behold, it just blew up. It got legs and never stopped walking. So, and next thing you know, it was about 2 months after it. It was probably because everybody was taking this video. And World Star Hip Hop, Bam Margera, all these people were taking this video and posting it on their website and their Facebook. And it was going viral on every site that it was posted on, every Facebook page and stuff. And and thankfully they were tagging me because some people don't do that. And so I keep getting contacted by these random people that say they're Vanilla Ice. Vanilla Ice is my best friend. What's your number? And I'll have him call you because this song's awesome. And I was running a tow truck at the time, my dad's tow truck service. So I was like, I got nothing to lose. So I gave my number to all of them. I was like, I didn't get my number anyway. So it turns out one of them was actually telling the truth. And about 2 months after the video released, I get a phone call. And I answer the phone just like always. Glenn Ray's Towing, how can I help you? And it's this voice, like just a wild animated voice, and it's like, hey, Marty Ray, like that. And I said, how you doing? Glenn Ray's Towing, how can I help you? And he goes, what's up, man? It's Rob. I said, how you doing? What's up, Rob? I had no clue that his name was Rob at the time. So I said, how can we help you? And he was like, I love that Ice Ice Baby. And I was like, appreciate it. I was still thinking, do I have your vehicle? I mean, what is it? Like, how can I help you? You broke down or what? And he goes, it's Vanilla Ice. And I said, really? He said, yeah, really. I said, sure it is. And didn't believe him. And he ended up saying, well, I want you to come out and do that song for the I Love the 90s tour. We're starting in Boca Raton. And I said, okay. I said, I'll believe it when I see the email. And the email came through. So Vanilla Ice and I became friends. I don't even know what the question was at this point.
It doesn't even matter. Who cares? I just think, you know, that's one of the videos you said you've done so long ago. And I didn't know the story behind it, but I was like, oh, I am dying to know how your voice, how you saying this, because your voice is so amazing. So every time you do anything, it has that Marty Ray twist on it. So the Marty Ray twist on Vanilla Ice was really, I really wanted to know. So is that still one of the most popular, and the all about the beard?
Well, I mean, at this point on YouTube, it's not. On YouTube, the most popular one that I've done is One Day, No Woman, No Cry.
Oh.
So I think it's like a little over 10 million. And then right behind that, I believe, is the cover of Old Town Road that I did. And there's a few more ahead of it. But probably on Facebook, if you accumulate all of the people that stole that video and posted it themselves, and then but they tagged me, so I didn't mind it.
Right.
It probably is well over 100 million views on Facebook. If you were able to add all that up, because even on my page alone, because I posted it several times back then, just because it was like this video that Facebook loved. It was weird because if somebody wanted to build their channel or their page at that time, they could take my video and post it and it would go viral. One of them got 30 million, one of them got 50 million, one of them got 15 million. And it was, and people would just like that page. They would think that page was me. So they would like that page. And so it was like this crazy video at the time that was a sure viral video. Like it was proven many times over. Now Facebook's way different. So it's not that way anymore, which I haven't posted in a while, but Facebook doesn't work that way anymore. I used to be able to post any music video that I posted without advertising, without anything. Back in those days, I could post a music video of mine and it didn't matter what it was, it would get 1 million views. So,
wow. Okay.
Yeah.
When did you're posting all these, you know, you rent the camera and you're posting all of these videos and you're focused on the YouTube channel, right?
I'm focused on both. Or actually focused on Facebook and YouTube.
Okay. Okay. And yeah. Which makes sense. And then you're working for a tow truck company. You're just posting videos because you love music and you love to sing.
I don't know about that. I mean, I definitely, so just a little backstory about my life. I can't hear anything out of this ear. When I was 5 years old, I lost my hearing in my right ear. And my whole life, people say, well, how'd you learn to sing? And I said, I never did learn how to sing. Probably don't do it right. God just gave me that gift. And I say my life is literally Proverbs 16:18. A man's gift makes room for him and brings him before great men. Right. And it's either 16:18 or 18:16. It's one or the other. But that's literally my life. And that's all I've done. There's no secrets. I didn't learn to do any of this. I just started using the talent that he gave me after being held back, fortunately, actually held back, because when I was growing up, I thought one day I'll be singing, I'll be doing this for a living. And my family were all like, even my father and my mother, they were just realists, you know, it wasn't that they weren't supportive. They said, hey, you're good or whatever, hey, you sound good. But it wasn't like they believed that, hey, one day this can be a living. You can make money doing this. It was too far-fetched. And then within my school and within my other family members, it was like some of them even said I couldn't sing. And some of them said that you need to dream within your city limits. That's kind of what we were taught in high school, was dream within your city limits. So we had a steel mill in Blyville, still there, Nucor Steel. And that was kind of what, if you weren't an academia star, then you were taught to figure out how you can get a job at that steel mill, because that's how you were going to make good money. And it is good money. But nonetheless, and I went that route for a little while. Tried to do one. I didn't want to work for my dad my whole life, but ended up working for him anyway until I actually started doing something with music, and God allowed me to go forward in that. So anyway, so but it was all for a purpose. I got held back because of doubt, because in that moment I was doubting for many years. I thought I probably just am one of these people that hear their self and you sound good to yourself, but you don't sound good to other people. You know, I kind of thought maybe that's what I was. And because, you know, like I said, there were some family members that said I couldn't sing, that it wasn't good. And I said, okay. Well, I mean, I didn't just say, okay. I got mad and, you know, threw a fit and said something hurtful to them probably. But I still in my head thought, I guess they're probably right, you know, and took that to heart. And for years with that, mixed with my dad saying it's not realistic, it's not a realistic goal, you probably never do that, it kind of held me back until I had my first two children. And my first two, I only have two. You have 18.
Yeah, yeah. I
Son
win.
Son of a gun.
It's all right. One makes you a parent. So you had your first two kids, and then you still are feeling like you are holding yourself back.
Well, I just gave up on it.
Yep. Okay.
It was just done. That was just not at this point. I was in my early 20s and just really just gave up on the whole music, thinking that it was going to do anything. And then I ended up getting an Apple. The first computer I ever bought that cost a lot of money was an Apple MacBook. Mm-hmm. This was in, I believe this was in 2005. And I'm horrible with dates, but I believe it was 2005. And I opened it up and I'm just playing around because I just spent more money than I should have on a laptop. And the reason I bought that was because I wanted to start doing what I wanted to do for fun was make parody music videos, because I thought that was fun.
Okay.
And me and my family got together and meaning my cousins and people like that, we could all get together and do this. And we had made a video called Fat Girl. You know, I felt, hey, I'm fat, I can talk about fat people. And it wasn't talking about any girl, any person in particular. It was just a big girl, like to eat, like me. So it was actually my cousin dressed up like a woman. And he was, because he's fat too. So he was, he ain't anymore. He was though. And so that we posted that and it was funny and people liked it. And it got like, you know, 30,000 views or something. And I thought, man, like we're famous now. Like we're doing this for real. And then apparently it offended some people. And even at that time, this was years ago, offended some people and I felt bad. So I deleted it. And thank God I did. Cause if it was up now, I'd be in big trouble just because of the title alone. But if somebody calls me fat, I could care less. I know it. And I'm thankful. There's a lot of money went into this body. You know what I mean? a lot of funds went into this. And, you know, and so that after that, it kind of sparked a little bit of hope, thinking that, well, that was rap though. You know, that was kind of a rap video. And so it wasn't singing. So it didn't spark something. I thought, well, you can make a singing career, but it sparked something thinking you could probably make a career making people laugh with music, comedy type. And so then I did. And then lo and behold, we were trying to do that. We never did get another one made, but one Christmas, and I should have said early on that when I was growing up, I didn't know my own voice. I mimicked other artists all the time. So mm-hmm. I always would mimic and try to sound exactly like all these people that I looked up to. And I thought I was pretty good at it. And so once I got in, once I made that 30,000 view video, I thought maybe I'd do a singing one, but I said it probably ain't gonna do that well. Cause if you sound like Ray Charles, or if you sound like Lynyrd Skynyrd, they already exist. So why would they want to hear me do their songs if I sound just like them? So nothing clicked to say, hey, you're going to, you know, God put you here to sing music, sing and write songs or whatever, until that Christmas when my cousin, my uncle, and I went to the church just to record some stuff. I wanted to learn how to record on the Apple. And we were recording, and my uncle had to leave, so we didn't get to finish that song. And I told my cousin, I just want to have something finished. So pick a song, and I'll just sing. You just play piano, and I'll just sing to however you're playing it. And he picked the Great Speckled Bird, and I had never heard anybody sing that. So I had no voice to mimic. So in that moment, he was playing, and I was sitting there listening. I was in what we call the vocal booth, but it was actually the pastor's office. It was a small church. And we ran a mic cord in there, and I was in there, and he was playing. It was just real beautiful, and I just started singing along to him. I said, "What a beautiful thought I've been thinking concerning a great speckled bird." And then I was like, just chills rushed over me, and it was like God said, "And that's your voice. Now you have your voice." And so at that point, I made a video for that, and I thought, well, let's see if people like this. And it did about the same. It got about 25,000 views, and I thought, well, maybe there is something to the singing. So that's kind of where the spark came from, was that day.
I love that the spark came from you singing about a fat girl with your male cousin. I mean, that's awesome. And that people were listening, and that made you question, maybe you could do this. How old were you then? How long ago was that?
I was in my early 20s. Maybe okay. 22 or 23. And I'm 39 now, even though I look older than that.
It's all about that beard. My husband's got an amazing beard. It's not quite your level, but it's really amazing. So I have a great beard appreciation.
Not a lot of beards are on my level, just so we're clear.
No, that's true. I know I watched it. It might have been all about that beard. There's like guys from prison, there's a video you did. Which video is that?
That is All My Friends Are Bearded.
Okay. There's tons of people in that video. It's an amazing video.
Yeah, it is really good. I'm still so very proud of that today. That was filmed in Jefferson City, Missouri at a haunted prison. They call it a haunted prison. And didn't scare me none. They kept saying, "This is haunted. This is this and this." I said, "Well, you know, I got Jesus and I'm filled with the Holy Ghost. So I don't care about it. If there is demons in there, they don't scare me." So they come around me, they don't get tormented. But anyway, so that's what I kept telling them. And they kept saying they was hearing something. And I was like, well, I just rebuke it then in Jesus' name. I ain't worried about it. But it was fun. And they let us have full run of the prison. And it was, I'm super grateful for them. It's called Missouri State Penitentiary. If anybody wants to go and see it and tell them you saw that video. And all those guys were fans of mine with the beards. And they just wanted to be in the video.
It is an incredible video. I'll link it here. I'll link it in the chat right here. It's incredible. I mean, you're right. Like Instagram are those 1 or 2 minute clips. It gives you little glimpses. I like that because I get to hear little snippets of what you do, but the YouTube channel is definitely where it's at. I want to go back to you saying when you were 5, you lost hearing in your right ear. Can we jump back there or jump back into the story? Because I know life wasn't always easy.
When I was 5 years old, I kept having ear infections in my right ear, and it got very, very severe. And the doctor that my parents kept taking me to kept giving them eardrops, even though they clearly were not working, because it had been weeks. And they one night, and I don't even really remember too much about this, but one night, the whole right side of my face went paralyzed. Like it was paralyzed on the whole right side because of this ear. This thing's throwing me off here. Yeah, here, right here, and this thing's backwards mirrored.
Yes.
And it threw me off. I'm like, wait a minute. That ain't my right ear. But nonetheless, it went paralyzed, and they rushed me to the doctor, and they said I had a claustiotoma in there, and it had eaten up the hammer, anvil, and stirrup that's inside my ear and the eardrum and everything. It had just destroyed the inside of my ear. So my whole life, I've never been able to hear really out of my right ear. And that was another reason why, you know, people always said there's no way that you're going to be able to sing, or you're going to be able that you should be that you can sing because you can't hear properly or stuff like that. And that stuff, anybody that says I didn't bother me, that stuff definitely bothers you, and it affects you your whole life until you get to a place. If you allow God to take you to a place that gets past all naysayers and past all the negativity, then and you say, I yield to whatever you have for me. Mm-hmm. And he starts to show you. And like Proverbs says, when your gift starts to make room for you and it brings you before these great men and you start to see that, nobody can anymore. There's nothing anybody can say anymore. They can't. There's nothing they can say to, like today. Even today, I get comments. There was one on my Facebook right now that this happened 2 days ago. And I answer a lot of my comments, probably 80% of them I answer them. I try to get as many as I can. This one guy said, your voice is too breaky and you call yourself a singer, something like that. And I said, I'll work on it. God bless you. I love you. And that's what I responded. And that don't really mean I'll work on it. Because I'm not putting any work in. I'm just trying to tell him, look, you ain't bothering me. You know, that's kind of what that means. You ain't bothering me. If you don't like it, that's okay. That's okay. It really is. It's okay if they don't like what I do, because there's plenty of people that do. And that's what I tell people that are getting into anything in entertainment. It's okay if somebody doesn't like what you do. Don't let them, even if you start off and then it's 100 people, and all they do is throw negative comments. Keep going. Keep going, because there's going to be an audience. There's an audience for everybody. So that's what I tell people.
I always heard that when you started getting negative comments, you knew you'd arrived. Like, enough people were listening that you actually started getting negative comments. But I mean,
I wish that was true, but that's really
It's not.
Yeah.
No, it's not. So you lost your hearing, and that was part of why your family was telling you this might not be for you. What else happened in school that I want to talk more about, the struggle, the discouragement, because obviously the first thing that you posted got 30,000 hits. You took it off, but it gave you the bug to want to do it again. And I love that you sang a song you'd never heard. Also, I want to know how long it took you to hear that song and see how differently you had done it.
Well, I went and looked it up pretty quickly, but the only one I could find was a guy named Roy Acuff, who's a country singer. I don't know if you know anything about country.
Yeah.
But Roy Acuff is a legend at country music. He's from way back. It's a lot different. It's the exact opposite of what I did. So it's a good thing I didn't listen, because it probably wouldn't have done as well if I would have sang it like that. I think people think I'm country. I'm a country music singer just because I'm a country boy, and just because I look the way I look, they think. I even get comments on that Ice Ice Baby and on the reggae songs that I do and the rock songs that I do and things like that. I get comments. People say, I didn't think I'd like this country. I didn't think I liked country and all this. And I always say, well, you still don't know if you like country. You still haven't heard it country, because this ain't country. I'm not against country. I like country music. And I do have some country music up, but I'm all over the map with it.
Yeah.
And it's just, it confuses people. And I think that's some of the appeal, is the fact that you got this big bearded, bald headed guy that looks like he's supposed to sing one way. And when you pull him up, he sings a different way. Like you said in the beginning, you didn't expect it. And I think the unexpectedness of it is what attracts people to want to hear more.
Also, it's unexpected based on how you look. You're right. It would be easy to stereotype you as a country music singer. Even that, you have a style that's surprising and good. So I find it super interesting that you, I mean, I think it's it's pretty normal to want to sing the song like the person sang the song, right? And not make it your own and try to find like what is your style, because you have such a genuine, remarkable style of your own. And I know we're talking 15 or so years since you put that first video out. So it's been a while, but do you even have a style? Because I don't think that you, I think you just have a Marty Ray style and you do everything with your own twist.
You mean, do I have a genre?
Yeah. I don't think so.
I think they're just all mine.
Like, yeah.
I don't really like genres, because genres, what that means is a box. And
yeah,
that's what labels do. And that's why I don't want to be with a label. I'll never sign with a label, because they want you to say, here's your box. Fit in it. Find your place in that box. And I don't want to find my place in that box. If I want to write, like if you listen to my albums, my original albums, even the songs I write, the last album, Mixed Emotions, there's an EDM song on there, like a club, like a boop, 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 boop. You know what I mean? And it's, then there's a blues songs and there's rock songs. And then there's these sad, rip your heart out songs that are on there. Just whatever came to my heart, whatever God put on me, I write. And that's what that is. And then I release it. What makes it hard is that all these platforms where your music lives, they want it. They want you to say, here's your genre. And so it's always hard for me because I have to pick one. I got to pick a genre and a subgenre. So I get two shots at getting people to listen to my original music. Mm-hmm. And it's hard sometimes. That's the only reason I do covers, is in hopes that people will listen to the originals. So some people do, some people don't.
I wanted to talk about that, about your music writing next. So segue into that, was writing something that was always passionate for you growing up? Did you like it? Is that how you segued into writing? Because writing music is a completely different animal.
Well, I couldn't even play the guitar or any instrument for the majority of my life. And I still tell people I really can't play it now that well. But I could play it good enough to write songs. When I was 12 years old, I remember my brother's friend playing the piano in my house, my mother's piano. And while he was playing, I said, what is that? What song is that? He goes, I don't know. I'm just making that up. So I said, keep playing it. And then I started just singing lyrics to that song, to that, what he was writing, what he was playing. And he goes, man, where'd that come from? And I said, that's just off the top of my head. He said, let's write that down. So we wrote it down. You know, we thought, hey, we're about to be famous, man. We're making hits now. This is crazy what's happening right here. Like we're about to blow up. Have no clue where that song is. Wish I could find it, because that'd be amazing. I always tell people, if I could find that song today, I would have a multi-platinum selling record, but I can't find it. So I don't have a multi-platinum selling record. But anyway, so the urge for writing songs and creating that, what was in my heart, started early on, like at 12 years old. So that kind of sparked it. So it lived with me the whole time. So then it kind of stayed alive through, you know how you'll be singing a song or you'll know a song and then you'll start changing the lyrics a little bit to fit you better or to fit your situation better. So I always did that. And then singing other people's songs. So eventually I started writing my own songs, but I couldn't play instruments. So I was at the mercy of musicians. So
got it. Okay.
I ended up buying, I can't tell you how many cheap guitars, trying to learn how to play guitar, probably five or six, anywhere from $100 to $300 guitars. Never would pick it up. So one day I said, I got these songs. I need to do something drastic here that's going to force me to learn this guitar. So I went out and I ended up spending $2,000 on a Martin guitar. And I said, if this don't make me learn, I don't know what will. And so even though you would think, so then I started strumming it at least and trying to learn. But what really did it, what really drove it home for me to get to learning it as best I can, was I went to a B.B. King concert. And I had the privilege of sitting front row. And at this time, BB's an old man. And he was sitting in a wheelchair, or he was in a wheelchair, but he could walk still. So they would roll him out, and he would get up and walk to his chair in the middle of the stage. And I'm on the front row of the show, and BB's playing, and he's playing. BB had turned, he made him turn the whole house lights on because he wanted to see all the people that came to see him, which I thought was awesome right off the bat. I thought, what a legend and a real king. And so he could see everybody, and I was on the front row, and he was playing. He stops the show. He goes, everybody hold on, everybody hold on. And he looks over at me. Nobody knew why he was stopping the show. He stopped it in the mid-song, and he goes, as long as that man right there is having a good time, so am I. Thrill is gone away. And I was just like, what in the world? And I just in shock, wondering, did he really just point at me and say that? And everybody thought, this guy must be from a label or something. Who is that guy? Who is this bearded white guy he just pointed at? I still, to this day, don't know why, but this story gets pretty crazy. I don't know how much time we have. How much time do we have?
We're good. You got 25 more minutes.
Okay. You're going to love this.
Okay.
I think. So then at the end of the show, he calls everybody to the front of the stage. He wants everybody, as many people as can get to the front of the stage, to come to the front of the stage. And I was already on the front row, so I let everybody else that wasn't on the front row get in front of me. And then he plays his last song. He has these guitar picks in his pocket, and he's sitting down, and he tries to throw them to the fans. They spread out in front of him. The fans are getting on stage trying to get these picks. They're picking them up. The security guards are throwing them off the stage, throwing the people, his fans. BB's getting mad. He's saying, stop doing that. I'm giving them no picks. And I'm just watching. I'm going, man, he mad. And so then he gets so mad and frustrated that he pulls off his gold bracelets and his gold necklace, and he throws half of it over here and half of it over here. So whoever the fans were that got some of BB's gold that he was wearing are truly blessed today. And at that point, I'm thinking, man, I should have got up there. I should have actually went on up there instead of being a nice guy. But nonetheless, they got blessed by that. So then afterwards, I knew the guy that booked BB. So I got a chance to go back and meet him. So we're being led backstage with this flashlight. It's a very narrow, like kind of like a hallway beside the stage to go to the green room. And we're being led with a flashlight pointing down. So we're just all trying not to step on anything. And there's a wall of security guards like this, sitting there like this, where you go into the stage, the entrance to the stage. And we're walking by them, and everybody walks by. And this is a lot of, there's probably 50 people in front of me. And they were all supposedly BB's family. Some of his family. He had a very, very large family. And this was in Mississippi, where he's from, too. So there was a lot of people there. And I thought, I don't think I'm going to get to meet him. But even if I didn't, I thought that was amazing that he pointed at me. So as I'm walking by, I'm looking down. Out from in between these two security guards, from, you know, where their legs are, comes this massive hand. And his massive hand reaches out as I'm going by and grabs my hand and pulls me towards the security guards. And I'm doing this, and I'm going, and they're saying, you got to move on. I'm like, somebody got a hold of my hand. I didn't, somebody. And they split, they parted ways. And there's BB King sitting in a wheelchair. He's got my hand. And he pulls me up to him. And he looks up at me and he goes, I want you to know that I had a fun time having you tonight. And I said, I want you to know that I love you, you know, and I'm just like, and thank you. You know what I mean? You just don't know what to say. Why is this happening? And so I had a record. It's still hanging on my wall to this day, record and a picture. And he goes, what do you have there? And I hand him that record. He goes, well, I was a handsome fella then, huh? I said, you still pretty to me, Mr. King. And he signed it. He said, I'll see you back there. And I go, wow, this is crazy, man. What's happening to my life right now? And so then I'm waiting in this line. I got my Martin guitar that I just told you about that I spent $2,000 on. I'm holding this Martin guitar, wanting to get BB's signature on it. And I'm waiting in this line. I wanted to be the last one to go in, which started to feel like it was a bad choice, because when I got to the last three, I could see in the room from the hallway, and BB's energy was just drained. Like, you could see that he was like, he would do this. He would, okay, baby. You know, and then you could just see his face. He just like drained. And so I waited. And the last one, I was watching as all these people were being turned away that didn't have Gibson guitars, that they could not get a signature. His manager was turning them, making them go away, because he was under a contract with Gibson, apparently, to where, or at least that's what they said, he was contractually obligated to only sign Gibson guitars. And so I'm thinking, even my friend, he's like, I don't know, Marty. I don't know if he's going to be able to sign it or not. He said, but just take it in there and see what happens. I said, all right, I'll take it in there. If not, so what? You know, it's an amazing night. And I went in there, and as soon as I walked in, he just lit up. He was like, hey, my friend. And I walk in there, and I hand him the guitar. And he looks up at the head of it, says Martin on it. He looks up at me, and he says, I'm going to sign it anyway. And he signed B.B. King on my Martin guitar, which could be the only one in the world. I don't know. Could be the only Martin guitar in the world signed by B.B. King. And so then, to top it off, to make him the one of the greatest human beings that ever lived, At this time, I had this album. I'd written songs. I'd written four songs. I didn't write the music. I just wrote the songs and the melody and recorded this album. And it was a four-song EP. And I had this with me, and I thought, if I'm going to make it, I need some originals. I need my originals to be heard. So I'd spent every bit of money I had going to the studio to make this album. And I had this with me. And at this point in my life, I had been handing this CD to people that I thought could help me, could maybe get me heard, and nobody cared. I handed this to BB. He was getting ready to take the picture with me, and we did take a picture. But before that, I hand my album to him. And I said, Mr. King, I said, here you go. And he goes, who's got that Sharpie? He said, bring me that Sharpie. And I said, no. I said, no, it's for you. He thought that I wanted him to sign my album for me. And he said, I know who this is for. And he made me sign my album to him.
Oh.
How crazy is that?
That's so awesome.
And I signed to Mr. BB King, Marty Ray, and I hand it to him. He goes, I appreciate this. I'll treasure this. He puts it right here like this. He's, I'm treasuring this. And we hold that CD on my wall in my office. There's me and BB holding that album of mine for that picture. And that was it. Never met BB again. Left there. Thought one day I'm going to do a song with BB King. Never met him again. But I like to think that he kept that album on his bus, touring with him the rest of his life. And because of that, I said, I got to learn this guitar. I have to learn now. I have been signed off by a legend. And since then, Willie Nelson signed it. Charlie Daniels signed it. Charlie Daniels actually tweeted, he was one of the ones, there was two men, two big time legends that lifted me up when nobody else would. It was BB King and Charlie Daniels. I had no fans, nothing. And it was about both times I was about to give up. I was like, it ain't going to happen. God didn't intend for me to do this. If he did, I would have already seen something. At those two times, God, that's why I say Proverbs 16:18, your gift makes room for you, brings you before great men. Two great men lifted me up in times when I was giving up. B.B. King, Charlie Daniels. Charlie Daniels took my album, said he would listen. I didn't hear nothing for 2 months. 2 months later, he tweeted me on and added me at Marty Ray Project. Your music rocks. I listened. I love it. And I have that tweet to this day. I screenshotted it immediately. I still have it saved. And so when I tell you that God has always made a way to keep me going, he still does it to this day. Nowadays, he does it through my fans, through new fans, people like you. So I don't need those other people's approval anymore. I don't need them to lift me up because I have y'all. See, whatever fans I make, they keep me going. So
were you raised in a Christian household? Is that a belief that you were raised with, or is it something that you came to? But and even if you're raised in it, at what point did you really lean into that, knowing there was something that you loved that you wanted to do that you weren't sure about? So bridge that gap for me a little bit.
Well, hold on a second. I was definitely raised in church. My church, even I'm still the same way today. We're a tongue talking Pentecostal. You know what I mean? We get down, bought by the blood of Jesus, baptized in Jesus' name, people. And so we was always just a wild church. You know, it was a very mixed cultural church, and we got the dancing and all that. That's what we do. And so I was raised in that, but fell out in my teenage years and was just doing stupid stuff, you know, going to clubs, getting into fights, these type of things, going after things that I thought I wanted, but I really didn't. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 18 years old, I got hit by a car, got ran over by a car. This guy was trying to run me over, and he ran me over, and I got hit and went up over the hood, and I was coming down on my head. Like I was up like this, head first coming down. And in that moment, I know this sounds cliche, but I don't really care because this is the truth. In that moment, it seemed like it was in slow motion as I was coming down. And I knew that I was coming down on my head, that I was either going to die or I was going to be, because this was like a movie. So he hit me going 55 miles an hour, and I rolled up over his car, and I was flying through the air and coming down. And I was thinking, I was trying to picture, like, what have you done for Jesus in these 18 years? Have you done anything for him that he should accept you into his kingdom? And I was sitting there, I couldn't find nothing. So all this happened so quickly. It sounds long, but it happened so quickly. And I said, Lord, if you'll save me from this, I'll do right. And, so when I came down, just at the last minute of coming down, my head came up and I hit my shoulder first. So I landed on my shoulder first, and then my head hit. And I got a hard head, so it didn't hurt as long as I didn't land on it. And got up. I think I broke a rib or something. And I'd like to say that I left that day and all about Jesus now, but still struggled for a while with trying to. The hardest part about being a Christian is where Jesus says, and people don't like this scripture, I don't think, but he says, there's two scriptures. One of them, he says, be perfect as I am perfect, right? Okay, so you go, so I should be at least trying my best to be that, to be as close to you as I can. Not living out here however I want and thinking, you're all right with it when you came and lived this way. And then there's another one that people don't like, and it's love your enemies, do good to those that despitefully use you, pray for those that hate you. This is something that the American Christians do not seem to know. They don't get. They want to fight and bicker with people, even their own family. And that's the part that I wanted. I said, if I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do it right. I wanna teach me how to love my enemies, the ones that hate me, the ones that might want to kill me. Teach me how to love that guy that wanted to kill me with his car. So that was a training ground. So I started learning that. And I like to say that today, I do love them. I love everybody. I really do. I don't, like I said, that guy online, these people online that I got attacked the other day, really, really was getting attacked because I posted a scripture on my Facebook page that said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the salvation of God for anyone that believes, and just got all these attacks. And they've always known, if you knew me at all, you knew that I was a Christian. They didn't like the fact that I posted that scripture, and a lot of people, but I didn't hate those people. Like, one guy was a Satanist, and he said, we're on the opposite sides of the spectrum. And I said, listen, I love you, and so does Jesus, and you need to switch teams because you're on the losing one. You know, like, that's what I told the guy. And the point is, all those people are the same type of people, not even the same, like it was worse with Jesus, but that's the same type of people that came after Jesus. They hated him. And
yeah.
He loved them. It was like, if he didn't, then would none of us be saved? So anyway, that was the hardest part, was getting to where I could live. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, but I'm getting closer every day.
I love that story. And I mean, if you lose fans because of that, they weren't fans anyway, right?
I guess that's what people kept saying on there.
Yeah.
I just think that, I guess they weren't, because they weren't true fans. They were fans maybe of one video or something. I don't know.
Right.
Because if you're a fan of mine, it's well known that I'm a Jesus man. Like, I'm a follower of Jesus. That's well yep. known. And I got atheists that follow me, and though I love mm-hmm. Jesus, I got every spectrum, Muslims, I got them all, and they follow me, and I love them, and they love me. Right. And I want them to, I hope and I pray every day that God gives me the anointing of King David, that when I sing or play, that it causes demons to run, right? Depression, doubt, fear, worry, that stuff leaves, and it ushers in the Holy Spirit. That's what I hope. And I've been attacked from my own family and people in the church. Not the church I go to now, but back in the church I grew up in and stuff like that, getting attacked for doing secular songs, right? And not being Christian. Well, you know, a long time ago, God told me, he said, if you label yourself a Christian artist, then all you'll sing for is Christians. But I came to preach forgiveness to the lost, not to the righteous. So if I told you the stories about how many people have messaged me these messages of saying things and telling me the details, and they'll say, I'm not going to get into details, but telling me that some song of mine, one of them was Let Her Cry. This guy said that he was going to take his life and Let Her Cry. He had a YouTube playlist on, and Let Her Cry from me comes on, and something told him to stop and put the gun down. And I just started weeping and crying. I said, man, that wasn't me. That had nothing to do with me. That was Jesus that did that. And had I only done Christian songs, that wouldn't have existed.
Yeah.
You see? So there's a problem with people. Now, I do think that some of these secular songs are pretty rough, but you got to get in there in the mix sometimes. And I ain't saying if you're an alcoholic, you should go and live in the bar, but or if you're a drug addict, you should go live in a crack house. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying at some point you got to get your hands a little dirty for the gospel.
I actually think that is a great point. And you do everything. You no stone unturned with what you're doing. What piece of advice, what got you through from when you were 5 and you lost your hearing to your early 20s when you posted the first video? What got you through? What are things that helped you get to the point where you were confident to post that first video?
I don't know if I ever lacked confidence, because I always thought, if they don't like it, I'll just delete it. I come from a family, a very negative family, as far as they weren't. I'm not trying to knock my family. I love them to death. They're awesome people, and they have great hearts. But as far as they were raised, the way they were raised, they kind of did the same thing. There was never a time when you were like, when you got praise from them. Like, it was always, hey, don't ever think highly of yourself. Don't ever think you're good at this. Don't ever think that. And that's okay. That's needed sometimes in this world, because there are some people that think a little too highly of themselves. But I never got that chance to. So at this point, I was used to negative feedback. So it didn't matter. When it got to the point to posting that video, if nobody liked it, I didn't have anything to lose. So if they didn't like it, I just delete it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how that happened. As far as after that was really how the the battle was won. It was like those stories I just told you with the 30,000 views and finding my voice and thinking, I think this is what God put me here to do. And then having those guys lift me up, that's where the struggle was actually won. Right there. If you want to know how a struggle was won, that's it. God did it.
Love that. What advice would you give to people, singing or not, just following their dream? What, let's end on the piece of advice that you would give to someone struggling.
I tell my daughters to create every day, no matter what. And you, and at some point, you're either going to create a masterpiece or you're going to change what you're creating to something else. Because if you are focused on creating something, because God made us in his image. Mm-hmm. That is, as a creator, he's a creator. We are creators. It's inherently in us to want to create. And when we don't, we're depressed. We're struggling because we're not creating. So, and it don't have to be creating music. It could be art. It could be writing songs. It could be books. It could be you're creating new relationships. It could be anything, but always create. And it will, God will make a way. He always does. If you don't bury your talents, he'll multiply them. That's what I tell people all the time, especially my children.
Marty, thank you so much for being on. This was such an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
Investing your time with me on At a Crossroads with the Naked Podcaster. I'm so glad that you joined our conversation. If you can take 2 minutes to share this episode with someone you think can benefit from it, or it would have a positive impact on their life, that would be amazing. Go to the podcast page to sign up for the free membership site where all guest links are available. This podcast is designed to help you in your struggles. So reach out and let me know what you enjoy or what you would like to see more of. It will support me on the journey of causing a worldwide epidemic of healing, gratitude, and joy. Until next time, remember you are not alone in your struggle. Reach out to me on any platform. I love to connect. You are worth it to me. Have an amazing day.